What's up? This movie's on up. Discussion episode. Favorite movie villains. May the silence be broken. I am Dave, joined by my partner in crime, Ryan.
Breaking the silence.
May the silence be broken. That's our tagline. If you're not familiar with Movies on Up, we have a tagline contest. If you know what that tagline, May the Silence Be Broken, is from,
I suspect I know.
Email it to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. If you're selected, you win a prize package.
If you get it right and you're selected.
Yeah. We wouldn't select you if you didn't get it wrong.
No.
We are Movies on Up. We can be found at Movies on Up on Twitter, facebook.com/moviesonup, moviesonup@gmail.com. The reason we set that up ahead of time is because we're going to talk about our favorite movie villains. So if we miss one or we're just way wrong, hit us up at any one of those to tell us that we're wrong. Before we get there, though, I think it's time for a bonus list. These are the top five movies with bad in the title. Number five, Ryan's favorite director, Michael Bay, Bad Boys. Number four.
I do like that movie, though.
I do, too, actually. Number four, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. Number three, Pete Jackson, Bad Taste.
I don't like that movie, though.
I do.
I hate it.
Number two, Peter Berg, director of Battleship, Very Bad Things. And number one, Bad News Bears, a classic, which also had a very good villain in its own right.
Jackie Earle Haley?
No, not that one.
No.
The old one.
Yeah.
Who was that, Vic Morrow?
No, that was Kelly Leak.
Oh, he was in it, yeah.
Yeah.
But was Vic Morrow the opposing coach?
The coach? Yeah, maybe.
So he might have made one of our lists.
He didn't.
Stay tuned to find
Spoiler
out.
Spoiler alert.
So we do these lists, and it's kind of broad. Favorite movie villains. We put favorite instead of best, because there's a bunch that come to mind right off the top of your head if you do best, and we wouldn't be telling you anything you don't know. So we just kind of make it broad and see how we take. I kind of took the approach I wanted to go after, like, underrated. I was thinking, like, oh, who can I say that you're not going to be expecting on the list?
As much as I like doing that, as much as I want to do that, I felt like, how can I frame this in a way that I don't put Darth Vader on there? How can I frame this in a way that I don't? You could easily do, like, top five horror villains.
Yeah, and I mean,
and I didn't want to do that. I mean, I have one on there. Technically, it's a horror movie.
Yeah, I have one of my honorable mention that's probably the same as you have.
Probably.
Because it's outside the box thinking. But
I think I'm almost guaranteed that it's on there.
Yeah, but my top five, I didn't put any horror. And I tried not to do any of the, even like I love Die Hard, but I tried to avoid Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
Because I think that's going to come up to everybody's mind. Like, your obvious ones, like Benedict Cumberbatch and Star Trek Into Darkness.
Really?
You know, Hans Gruber.
Is that obvious?
Darth Vader. Like, I try to avoid those and just think kind of outside the box. So my list may not be, I'm not going to pass it off as the best screen villains, but who did I like that people don't really pass off as some of the best of all time?
What makes it the best? I mean, is it somebody that you were rooting for to win?
Somebody that legitimately scares you?
Somebody that scared you? Somebody that was absolutely nuts and you thought, man, this dude does need to go down? Or just someone you enjoyed them being on screen?
There's a lot of ways you could go. So enough about how we came across our list. Let's get to our list.
Or how we didn't.
Yeah. So Ryan, you're number five.
This is actually the only lady that I have on my list. And I feel bad that she's number five, but when I really got down to it, there's no way I could have put her above anybody else. And that was Louise Fletcher, better known perhaps as Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. She actually won the 1976 Oscar for Best Leading Actress for her role in that movie.
Yeah, that was one of my honorable mentions.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, because she's really good.
She's really good. And, I mean, she's a villain throughout the whole time. I mean, she's kind of a bitch, but she's doing her job for the most part. But kind of when it gets to the end, you feel like you could sympathize with her, but then kind of the way she does McMurphy at the end, she really does become a villain, and it's just kind of a bad person.
There's a lot of things that can make you a villain, and being in a position of power and trust and abusing that is an easy way to become a villain. So, I mean, she did both of that.
Right.
So, that's a really good one. That's a fantastic movie. It's an all-time classic. My number five did not win any awards.
No?
No, did not get nominated for any awards.
Really? That's surprising.
Oscar voters probably never even saw this movie, but did have probably the best soundtrack to a movie ever.
Space Jam.
Dennis Leary as Fallon in Judgment Night. He's a cool villain because it's not, he's not a villain on a large scale. Like, he's not, he doesn't have this overarching plot to take over the world. He has his area. If you cross him in that area, you're going to be on his bad side. And you don't want to be on his bad side. And then he, Cuba Gooding Jr., Stephen Dorff, Jeremy Piven, they get on his bad side. Emilio Estevez. And it's just him hunting them down. Like, they just, he's so cool because this is Dennis Leary when he was at his Dennis Leariest. So, like I talked about The Ref a few weeks ago, how that fit him. This one did too, but this one showed a little bit of range because he did have this like darkness to him. And
it wasn't just angry.
It wasn't just angry. It was, and there was a large part of that, like, oh, you messed with what's mine. So there's that relatability to him. Like, yeah, you don't have to go on a murderous rampage, but you can understand where the motivation comes from. And then just the twistedness of, like, his body count's not very high. Like, not a lot of people die in that movie. But when he kills Jeremy Piven, it's right after he's convinced Jeremy Piven that he's okay. Like, it's right after he's convinced him that he's not going to do anything to him. And shoves him out a window. So, I mean, there's that something. It takes a lot of evil to kill a man. It takes a lot more to convince that man he's safe and then kill a man. So I think he, it showed some range as an actor for Dennis Leary. And say what you will about the movie, I still enjoy it. The soundtrack was awesome. I think Dennis Leary was worth watching for just because he is such a cool bad guy in it.
Another bad guy that doesn't have a ridiculously high body count, maybe a bit higher than you think when you go back and watch it, but not a mass murderer by any stretch of the imagination. But I challenge you. I mean, I guess you could, off the top of your head, maybe think of one or two other people from this movie, but he's absolutely the takeaway. Javier Bardem, Anton Chigurh, from No Country for Old Men. Interesting side note, Javier Bardem won the 2008 Best Supporting Actor for this role.
That was another one of my honorable mentions, just because he's so calm.
Yes, for a complete nutbag, and I'm not even sure if he was nuts, but, I mean, this scene where he flips the coin, heads you live, tails you die, and it's that simple, and he adheres to it.
And that was the best, I mean, yeah, he kills the dude with the cattle thing, but yes. I think the most telling
lots
scene,
of dudes, he's lugging around a tank of air, compressed air, so we can kill you with a bolt.
I think the most telling scene of that, though, is in the gas station where heads you live, tails you die, and
right.
He comes up heads, and he just leaves.
Yep, what can you do?
Because he doesn't explain to the guy, it's just heads or tails. Heads. He flips it. It's it. He leaves. Like, there's no explanation. So it's just,
you know.
Yeah, that's the rule he lives by, and that's it. So, I mean, he's a really good villain. And, I mean, instantly, I didn't like the movie. I've been on record about I don't like No Country for Old Men. He was fantastic in.
I mean, it's a very slow movie. It almost takes the pacing of his character, who's kind of methodical.
Kind
and
of monotone.
Yeah.
Kind of boring. Just,
not a lot of flash. But the movie won Best Picture, and he's why. You don't remember
Tommy Lee Jones, I mean, Josh Brolin.
That's the thing, is Josh Brolin was kind of the protagonist in the movie, but you don't remember him, and I don't really think that you, I mean, I'm not a murderer, but I think I sort of more sided with Javier Bardem, and he's just so creepy and so capable of anything. The last scene, one of the last scenes when, again, it's with the coin and Josh Brolin's wife when he flips the coin. And you don't know. You don't know what the outcome was, but you could see it go either way.
My number four, kind of a mix. He wasn't calm and collected like Chigurh was, but his opponent was. He's facing somebody who's very calm and collected and safe. And he's also in a position of power like Ryan's number five. Gary Oldman is Stansfield in Leon the Professional. Like, so deranged and so sick and evil, but he's one of the good guys. Like,
yeah.
He's with, like, he's working for the law, and it's just, he's so good in that. And he has all these people at his disposal, which he uses for what he wants. He's just such a good villain. And I mean, Gary Oldman can play anything, but this is one of the best, I'm not going to say, it's not Gary Oldman in True Romance, but it's one of my favorite Gary Oldman roles just because, I mean, you see more of him than you do in True Romance, but it's just he's so calm and collected, but psychotic at the same time and loud and boisterous, but like calm at the same time. And it's just, he's such a mix of so many things and he pulls it off. And it was awesome. I mean, he was so good. I love that movie so much, and I love everybody in it, but he is definitely a highlight in just this great movie.
He's probably third on the list of things that I remember from that movie, but it makes you realize how good of a movie that was. I mean, you remember the really, really young Natalie Portman, and that was just a really good movie.
Yeah, and I mean, you remember Jean Reno and you remember Natalie Portman, but I don't think you can rewatch it and not just get lost by Gary Oldman. Like, maybe people forget how good he is in that just because the movie is so good overall.
I think that's it.
But if you just focus on him and watch what he does, he's so good and so compelling on screen and far and away one of the better villains. But when it comes to best villain lists and stuff, like, he doesn't pop up a bunch. Or when you hear people talk best villains, like, I don't hear him come up a lot.
Yeah, and he's one that, you know, you mentioned True Romance. There's a couple people that probably could make the list from
Gandolfini could have been in it. Walken, even though he's in it briefly. I mean, those are just, that's a good villain movie.
But even Gary Oldman's got a couple roles that he could probably appear best villain. Our next guy is definitely working his way towards that. He may be like the modern day Gary Oldman.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
You might say. No, not even close. It is Christoph Waltz. Hans Lund from Inglourious Basterds, who in 2010 won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. I feel like he absolutely had it wrapped up in the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
The first scene of the movie is so good. It makes up for the next 2 hours that are not.
Yeah.
I like Tarantino. I'm a honk for the guy. And this movie was not good, but this scene, this first half hour of the movie, 20 minutes maybe, it's probably the best first 20 minutes of a movie I've seen in years. So suspenseful, so tense, and the tension's there, but Waltz is just, again, he's playing it so monotone, a bit like Chigurh, but just straight up evil. There's nothing redeeming about the guy. But it's so good. And he's, I mean, the whole time you're literally on the edge of your seat, and it's largely because of him, because you know he's bad. You know he's going to kill this girl if he finds her. He literally could have taken, he wasn't in the movie a bunch for the rest of it, but he literally could have taken off after that first scene. He still would have won the Oscar because he was that good in that first 15 minutes.
I mean, even stuff like that kicked off a tear for him. He did a lot of German language stuff before that. But he was the villain in Green Hornet, which, yeah, pan that movie all you want. He was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, he was just the scene with James Franco at the beginning. Like, he's just a really good villain. And then him in Water for Elephants, which, say what you will about Arpats, that movie's pretty good. And a lot of it is because of Christoph Waltz, who essentially the villain in that. So, I mean, yeah. He's the villain in Muppets, the Muppet sequel. So he definitely knows what he's good at. And, I mean, he's gotten 2 Oscars already. So
yeah, one for not being the villain.
Yeah.
But range.
He could go down as he's going to keep doing those roles.
Better keep doing Tarantino movies.
Yeah. My number 3, Christoph Waltz, we talk about. He's going to go down as one of the greatest actors, you know, in a while. My number 3, not so much. My number 3 might be a reach. Dan Aykroyd as Grocer from Gross Point Blank. He's just the calm, like, however, it's just a joke. And I mean, Dan Aykroyd brings that, like, yeah, he brings this thing where he's on screen and you don't really take him as a threat, but he's just killing people randomly, and it's all just because they disagree with them. And that's one of the scariest things, is that a villain you can reason with is, I think, more terrifying than one that has no rule or purpose. And all Dan Aykroyd wants is a hitman's union and John Cusack stop not letting that happen, so he just wants to kill him. And it's just, his motivation is, it just, I don't know, it's a little bit of a reach, but I thought he did really well for it. And just the dialogue and stuff, just the fact that he was so lighthearted as he goes down to hunt down and kill this, you know, these people.
It's a very offbeat choice, but it fits the movie. I mean, the movie was very offbeat. And I think if you got somebody that didn't have the like comedic sense that Aykroyd had, it wouldn't have worked.
No, it'd be hard to throw a Christoph Waltz in that movie.
Exactly. Or I was even thinking Gary Oldman, but it had to be a guy that was kind of likable. Because essentially that was what this movie was about. It was a hitman that was likable. So it made sense that the antagonist was also a kind of a likable guy.
And that's why I think it works so well, because I mean, maybe I'm reaching on this, but I think I just really liked him in that movie. And just the fact, even at the end, like a villain you can reason with, I think is terrifying. And just even at the end, they're in the showdown right before it ends. He's still trying to reason with them. And you believe that, oh, if John Cusack agrees, it's all over. Like, he gives you that to where it's like all he wants is say, hey, help me form this union. And if he says yes, it's just all over. And you believe that from him.
Like, heads or tails, if you get it right, everything's going to be fine.
But then you also believe, like, oh, if you don't, he's going to kill you and just laugh about it. Like, he's just going to kill you. He's going to crack a one-liner and move on to the next job. So I really liked him in that movie. And, I mean, I really love that movie. I think I love everything about that movie. And I think Dan Aykroyd is a big part of that. Like, he makes it work.
My number two, this is where it's going to start getting a little bit obvious. Actually, at this point, even if you don't know the theme that I've kind of gone with here, you should be able to guess the last two. If you have noticed the theme, they're absolutely layups. It is Heath Ledger is the Joker. That one, the next, they're going to be on everybody's
list.
See,
your next two I left off just because the obvious, like I wanted to go off. But I mean, they're good. They're accurate.
They're good, but I mean, everybody at this point had won an Oscar for their portrayal of a villain. So at that point, I really couldn't leave the next two out. As much as I maybe wanted to, it fits with both of the themes. So I have to do it. Obviously, Ledger won for Best Supporting Actor for The Dark Knight in 2009.
Posthumously.
Yeah, won the second posthumous award. I mentioned Network a lot. That was the other one.
Yeah.
So I feel like if you have a guy...
Robert Duvall from that movie almost made my list.
Faye Dunaway could have made my list from Network.
Yeah.
But she didn't. Heath Ledger did. Yes, he was very good in that movie. What I think makes him look even better is if you look at Batman Begins and you look at The Dark Knight Rises, those are inferior movies to The Dark Knight. And I feel like it's because of Ledger.
It's not entirely because of Ledger. It was a much better... That had the best script by far. The villains had the better material to work with, but
they did.
He did elevate it.
Yes, that's my point. Is like, I mean, you had the same, a lot of the same cast, you had the same leads, you had the same director, who's a good director, but just the second one was far and away the best of the three.
And I mean, a lot of the stuff, a lot of the inside baseball stuff, like a lot of the most memorable scenes of his
came from
improvised.
Him. Yeah. So it's not even...
The funny Joker scene where it's just like... Because it wasn't written as a fun role. Like, Joker, even in the comics, even as evil as he was, always had this funness to him. I don't think it was really written like that, but Ledger added some of that. And, like, the outside the hospital with the pressing the button and shaking it because it didn't blow up. That's improvised. Like, in the moment, the slow clap when he's in the holding cell, like... He did that. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that wasn't written for the movie that he did. I mean, he went into it. Like, that's acting. Like, there was a lot of crap about him getting the role because he's just a pretty boy.
Yeah.
He was a good actor, but he was a pretty boy actor up until then. Now you're playing, people didn't think Nicholson could be touched. Now people don't think Ledger can be touched.
It's awfully tough. I mean, you talk about it being good acting. Like, he was essentially that entire.
Because I don't watch that and see Heath Ledger.
No, 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 you don't. But he was unhinged that whole time, and maybe it kind of got to him. So I don't know how much at that point he was acting, or he just kind of became the character.
I feel like you could be the biggest Heath Ledger fan in the world and go into a coma before this movie comes out, and then watch this movie and see his name in the credits, and at the end of the movie go, I thought Heath Ledger was in this. Like, I honestly believe even the biggest Heath Ledger fan can forget that that's Heath Ledger. because he did just take the role. And
yeah.
He is kind of unrecognizable with the makeup. Yeah. And the, I mean, not just the white makeup, but the scars and the stuff. So.
Yeah, and the hair. And
I mean, he is one of the absolute best film villains of all time. Like, I think if you randomly ask people on the street, he's going to be one. You're going to hear him a lot.
Yeah, and you should. I mean, sometimes I like to not put on things that are obvious because they're obvious. But at the same time, like, and there are cases when I can't justify leaving it off, especially if I just went with people that won Oscars for portraying villains. You can't leave off the top two. You can make the argument that he's number one. I will make the argument that he's not here in a couple minutes, but I wouldn't be upset. I wouldn't kill you because you disagreed with me.
Well, plus, like, he's the opposite of Dan Aykroyd, and what I talked about made Dan Aykroyd so great is he had reason. You could reason with him.
This guy was just a nut.
Joker didn't have any. He was a dog chasing his tail, and he says it like that, or a dog chasing a car. Like, he doesn't know what to do with it. He just wants to see the world burn, and, like, he just wants that chaos. And, I mean, it's obvious money's not his motivation. You don't know his.
He lights the money on fire.
Yeah, you don't know his motivation, so. He was just so well written, and he took this great material and just elevated it.
And even, like, the character, people knew when Heath Ledger died, they loved his performance so much. It was like, boy, I hope there's some kind of a nod to the Joker in The Dark Knight Rises, just because he was so awesome in that movie.
Yeah, no, he's definitely deserves to be on this list. My number two, still trying to think outside the box, I went with, you know, a movie from, you know, early 90s. Christopher Lloyd is Judge Doom from Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I like that.
Because a way to make a villain super effective, your number one's barely on screen. You know, Chigger isn't on screen a whole bunch. Christopher Lloyd isn't on screen a whole lot, and even less as his, like, form that he takes at the end, and he's terrifying.
Spoiler alert, yeah.
Yeah, spoiler alert on from a movie in 1992.
I know. I'm saying that with a smirk. He's a cartoon.
Yeah, but like him in that cartoon form for a whole movie, you get used to it. You grow old of it. Him in that, like, it's terrifying. Even to this day, like, he's a terrifying, like, because he's just
terrifying,
psychotic.
And then the realization that he's wanting to melt cartoons. He is one.
Yeah, and he just kills the shoe, like, without thinking about it, like. He's terrifying. He really is. And that movie's so good that I don't think, upon, like, just first thinking about it, I don't think you realize, like, how good of a villain he is, because the movie is so good. And that, even that last sequence with Bob Hoskins, like, singing and dancing, it's such a fun movie that you don't take the time to realize that, oh, this fun movie had a really psychotic villain, like a crazy, deranged villain that was portrayed perfectly. I mean, who else could play that role other than Christopher Lloyd?
For as slapsticky as that movie was, you know, you talk about Dan Aykroyd fitting the offbeat villain in Gross Point Blank. Christopher Lloyd fills that sort of slapsticky, zany, but still really menacing villain for Roger Rabbit. And that was a really good movie.
When he came to mind, it's like, oh, that's good. That's got to be up near the top. Like,
and if I was going to make a list of, like, I mean, yeah, it's a kid's movie, but if I was going to make a list of, like, my top five favorite neo-noirs, I would actually consider Roger Rabbit one of them. It's really good, and yeah. I think people kind of forget that because it's a cartoon. Partially, mostly.
Yeah, it's just such a good movie, but that was my number two.
Do you want to tell everybody what my number one is?
I'm assuming Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins. One best actor in 1992. He was on screen talking and stuff for just longer than Dave was on screen in Cleveland, I Love You. About 16 minutes, and he won Best Actor in an Oscar. So at that point, it's hard to argue that he's not the best villain of all time. I mean, really, he's not even the main villain in that movie. It's Buffalo Bill.
And that's the point I want to make, is that everybody looks at Hannibal Lecter as, like, one of the best movie villains of all time. And that's true. But the only bad thing about that is it overshadows Ted Levine's portrayal.
Yeah.
Which Ted Levine is amazing in that movie.
Yeah.
As Buffalo Bill, he is amazing. And it is kind of sad that Hannibal Lecter, Anthony Hopkins, deserves all of that. But Ted Levine nailed that movie. He was so good. And he's the kind of guy, you look at his resume, he's like Christoph Waltz, he's always a fantastic villain. He was Bosco in Heat. Not Bosco in Heat. He played the character Bosco in the movie Heat. But, I mean, even go back to, like, the 70s. He's one of those, you could look at his resume and pick any of six or seven movies, and it fit. So, to overshadow him, like, it's incredible. And
which is why it's hard to argue with that not being number one. If you don't remember about, you know, almost anything else from the movie, but you remember that character, people that haven't seen that movie know Hannibal Lecter. Yeah. They'll misquote the lines. I mean, that just, it has to be. I mean, that's one of the, he's creepy, and he's not the main villain, but he does.
He steals it.
Yeah, he steals it, and, you know, up until the very end, when he's got those night vision goggles on, and Clarice is looking for him in the basement, it's so creepy, and you think he might kill her, you don't know. Again, it's like Chigurh. You just don't know. He does have sort of a code, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can kind of see it going either way, and it really leaves you suspense.
Hannibal in that movie is perfect. The rest of them,
yeah, like, not as much.
Hannibal, not as well. The Red Dragon remake, not as much. But if you don't watch Hannibal on NBC, starring Mads Mikkelsen and Hugh Dancy, watch it. It got a second season despite terrible ratings. Like, I'm only saying it because nobody's watching it. It's so good.
Dave's not going to get a check if you guys do start watching
it. It's so good. NBC took a shot and gave it a second season. Please catch up and make it worth it. It's so good because the character is so good. And again, like, it's such a good character. Mads Mikkelsen isn't the focus of that show, but he's really good. Much like Anthony Hopkins wasn't the focus of that movie, but that's what people think of. He's on the poster.
Yeah.
He's on the poster. I mean, he stole the show on that. So, my number one, if you've met me or heard me talk, it's not a surprise. It's not Hans Gruber or Stripe from Gremlins. Those are obvious ones. It's not Bodhi from Point Break. Chiwetel Ejiofor as the operative in Serenity. Just because he's so by the book, he's got this belief. It's not even he believes that what he's doing is right. He's going to do it at all costs. I mean, you're introduced to him right away where he tells the doctor, in a better time, a man that makes this kind of mistake would fall on their sword. Doctor says, oh, well, luckily I forgot my sword today. And he just pulls out a sword. Like, that's your introduction to the character. And then he gives a speech, and it's delivered with such, like, conviction that you feel like, oh, he's trying to calm this man right before he kills him. And you believe in his heart that he's just, you know, it's a good death. He's trying to convince this guy it's a good death. And then just the rest of the movie, he's so methodical. When you're in a duel with him, he's going to tell you what he's doing wrong. He's going to do whatever it takes to get what he wants. And it goes back to what I said about Dan Aykroyd. You can reason with him the whole time. At any time, Mal can give him what he wants, he's going to leave him alone. You believe him, but he doesn't, and he fights, and it's not a matter of defeating him. It's a matter of switching his beliefs. Like, it's a matter of making him believe that what he's doing is right is actually the wrong thing, and that's what they do, because ultimately how they defeat him is just switching his beliefs, and he's so good. I mean, he's just so chilling when he needs to be. Some of the lines when Mal says, I don't kill children, and just Chiwetel's delivery of, I do. When I have to. Like, it's just like, holy crap. Like, this dude doesn't care what it takes to get it done. He's just going to get it done.
Which makes him dangerous in that there's nothing that's going to stop him, really. Like, you're either going to have to kill him, which is pretty difficult to do, or, you know, you use that reason. That's really your only chance. You're not going to get away from him. He's not going to stop. You either have to kill him or convince him to leave you alone.
And that's, I mean, just...
And they're both difficult.
Yeah, he did. And then there's that he does have those brief moments, because at points it feels like he's not human. But then near the end, you see a true moment of fear in him. And it's like, oh, he is human. Maybe he is able to convince. Like, you get that, like, fire, fire. He just kind of loses it. And it's like, oh, maybe there is a little bit of human in there that maybe you can't. It's portrayed so well. And Joss Whedon has talked about that he came on and he did so well with the material that Joss Whedon went to him and said, hey, I want to write more scenes to get you in it more. And Chiwetel said, no, a villain is more effective the less he's seen. So in reality, you don't really see him a lot, but they're just, you see them on the run from him, and he's just so good. And I will hold him up against Darth Vader or Hannibal. Like, I honestly believe he is such a good villain. Like, that's not just my Firefly, like, fanboy. And I'm like, I just think everything I love about a movie villain, he has. Like, he's not afraid to kill. He's mass murderer, like, and just wants what he wants and is going to get it. So I love him as the operative. Plus his fight scenes. You get to actually see him in action, and he's awesome. Like, he's a good adversary. Like, he can beat you mentally or physically. Like, I love Edge. I mean, I've been on, that's the first thing I've seen him in, and I went back and watched everything Edge of 4 did up until that point, just for him as an actor. And I still love him, and I can't wait. He's going to blow up with 12 Years a Slave, and I can't wait for it.
So that was...
You liked that movie, too.
Oh, what, 12 Years a Slave?
Serenity.
Yeah, I like it. I like it fine. I think the problem that I have with it is that I didn't remember he was the villain.
That's your fault.
Sorry. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I didn't remember he was a villain. But, I mean, maybe you've convinced me he's good.
Who do you have as your honorable mentions?
You know, I didn't really do a lot of honorable mentions. I feel like, you know, you could, obviously, you know, Darth Vader. I think... for whatever reason, I was trying to justify putting Boba Fett on instead of Darth Vader. I mean, I feel like you could very easily run down, you know, your Freddy's, your Jason's.
Yeah, Michael Myers.
Yeah, there's just so many like
Norman
that.
Bates, like there's a bunch that
yeah.
I didn't want to do because I'm sure you've heard people talk about those before.
Yeah, and even, you know, for me to get out of the box, like I was thinking about Orson Welles in The Third Man.
Yeah.
But I've even talked about that. Like, he's got the best movie entrance almost in the history of cinema, which is probably why I was talking about it. But I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like the ones I picked, I was pretty solid in. I mean, I think I could have maybe found a couple more that would have fit my, would have fit the pattern, but that would have been reaching, I think.
Yeah, my honorable mentions, I had Benedict Cumberbatch as John Harrison in Star Trek Into Darkness, which over time you might move up the list a little bit. This is like a tag team. Tom Noonan as Kane and Gabriel Damon as Hobb in RoboCop 2. I thought that's a cool villain combo because Tom Noonan as a villain, like he's got that voice that he's terrifying. Like just hearing Tom Noonan talk is scary. I don't care what role he is. And then just the idea of this little kid drug lord I liked. But then that opened the door to Kurtwood Smith in the first RoboCop.
That's what I was going to say.
RoboCop 1 and 2 had awesome villains.
I like Kurtwood Smith better.
The first two RoboCop movies just had great villains, and for a lot of the same reasons. They just didn't care. The one I thought you might have on your list, David Cronenberg as Dr. Decker in Nightbreed. That's really one of the only horror ones I went with, just because it's such a weird role in such a weird movie.
Yeah.
Like, he's just a psychiatrist by day, but then one of the most terrifying masks and just psychotic killer. It's just such a weird role that I think it's a fantastic villain.
I guess, you know, if there is one that I could have put on there, I guess I would have gone maybe Malcolm McDowell from Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
He's the villain. He's a rapist. He's a pedophile. I mean, he's a lot of things. And he's also kind of the protagonist. So,
yeah.
That one would
have
been...
That was a weird one.
Yeah.
Julius Carey as Shonuff in The Last Dragon.
Yeah.
He's such a good villain. Like,
he fit that movie.
To dress like that, to just don't... like,
who's a master?
He's a lot like Fallon in Judgment Night, my number five, where, yeah, on a big scheme of things, maybe he's not this like criminal mastermind, but you mess with his stuff... You don't want to mess with his stuff. Like, no. You don't want to be in his path. I had Ralph Fiennes as Harry in Bruges. And if you see, like, in
yeah.
a common thread of mine, where most of them were calm. And Ralph Fiennes, the first time you see him, he's talking about killing, like, make sure they get killed. And he's just, like, in the middle of a like family get together with his kid, and like he's going away, like, oh, I gotta go kill him myself, and he just says goodbye to his kid, and it's just like, that's scary, because that's just a regular person that's just this evil, evil man. And then not so much a villain, but kind of the villain role, Miguel Fuhrer as Snyder in Deep Star 6. It's a monster movie, but he's the one that kind of, he becomes almost as much of a threat as the monster itself. So
Paul Reiser in Aliens.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
And I like Sunshine. Blanking on the name right now.
Oh, I was like
Mark Strong's
the
character.
Sun. The Sun was a jerk in Sunshine.
Pinbacker in Sunshine.
I would say our lists are probably pretty divergent.
Yeah.
Which I'm happy when that happens. It would be a bummer if we both had Freddy, Darth Vader, General Zod.
My number five is Freddy. Oh, I had him at number three. Oh, my number four is Darth Vader. Oh, I had him at
number
one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't think at no point when I put Dennis Leary from Judgment Night did I think Ryan would say, like, oh, that's my number two.
Yeah, no. I mean, I guess I was a little worried on, like, my top two because they were layups. And sometimes I feel guilty doing that, but it makes me feel better when, you know, you didn't say, oh, well, I have Anthony Hopkins on my list. I just didn't put him at I just put him at five because I wanted to put the operative from Serenity at number one.
He is my number one.
He is your number one. Let us know what your number one is. We'd love to hear about it. MoviesOnUp at gmail.com. Twitter at MoviesOnUp. Facebook.com/MoviesOnUp.
Each week on our discussion episode, we try to give you a themed watch this, something to watch at your home. Ryan, this week the theme, movies starring bad guys.
I think bad guys is maybe a little bit in quotes because they're not really bad guys. They're the heroes. You root for them, but they are con men. They're grifters. It's another movie that I've talked about a couple times before, but I feel like the more I tell you about The Sting from 1973, the more likely you are to watch it. Really, really good. It's Paul Newman, Robert Redford. Both dudes are so good individually. You put them together, they had a really, really good chemistry. And it could probably fit my theme of having Oscars because it won for best director, best picture. So, and also Robert Redford did get nominated. I forget who he lost to in 74, but I want to say it was a really kind of a tough year, but good movie. They are criminals, so I guess they're on the wrong side of the law, but they're helping out the law in this movie.
I have a double bill, a Christopher McQuarrie double bill. The guys are a little bit more evil than con men. Start you off with Usual Suspects. You watch that. Chaz Palminteri is the good guy. You don't really want Chaz Palminteri to win, though. And then follow that up with McQuarrie's directorial debut a couple years later, Way of the Gun. Benicio del Toro and Ryan Phillippe are your leads. Not really good guys. Kidnappers, not afraid to do anything, but that's who you're rooting for. Both really good movies, both masterfully written. Christopher McQuarrie is fantastic when it comes to that. So that's mine. Our news episode was earlier this week. This is our discussion episode. Next week, we're coming back with a news episode, and our discussion episode later in the week will be our favorite movies with a lead that's not from this planet. Something like that.
From another Earth?
Yeah. So, till then, you can find us at MoviesOnUp on Twitter, facebook.com/MoviesOnUp. Hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, or hit us up, moviesonup.com. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. You can find our RSS feed right from our website. I'm Dave Bacella. You can find me at Dave Bacella on Twitter. I listen to Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. That's my other show at ericanddave.com, Eric with a K. Ryan, anything to say before we get out of here for a week?
Keep it up.